Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I'm Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I am David Leopold, the Creative Director.
And we're here for a highly anticipated episode, one I have teased much in the past. We're here to talk all about Hirschfeld prints.
I've always said that Catherine is a print tease.
I love my prints. I love talking about prints. So we're here to give you all the information, everything you wanted to know, and more.
It's true. I mean, actually, this is the artwork by Hirschfeld that is in more homes than any of his other work.
That's true, yes.
Yeah. And one could argue that everybody sees a print of Hirschfeld work when you see it in a newspaper. It is something like a print.
Okay, that's a little confusing. I would say that is Hirschfeld printed work. We're not talking about, you know, just any printed material. We're talking about hand signed, limited edition prints, lithographs, and etchings.
Well, how about we start off with some definitions? Because we get asked this a lot.
Yeah, this is probably one of our top asked questions.
People want to know what the difference is between an etching and a lithograph. A lithograph is, and this is a very simplified definition, but a lithograph is a drawing with a greasy crayon on a smooth surface like a stone, a lithograph stone, which is usually heavy, because it's then put into the press. The paper is dampened. It is laid down on the stone. You work the press, and the press presses the paper into the stone. And then when you pull the paper off, the transfer of the crown to the paper is the print.
Right. And you'll often hear it referred to as stone lithography.
Yes. Yes. And that is the, in the first half of the 20th century, that was really the only way to do it.
Gotcha.
Whereas an etching is, it's lines etched into a plate. The artist etches those lines into the plate. Again, it is put into a press, paper dampened, usually not always. The ink goes into those etched lines, and then that is what's transferred onto the page. Mm. There is no, etchings are not better than lithographs or vice versa.
Right. One is inherently more valuable than the other, which is another question we get a lot. It's just two different ways of creating a print, which is kind of the all-encompassing term we use to refer to both lithographs and etchings.
Exactly. And they're essentially just two different media or mediums. Would be the difference between a pencil and a pen. Some pencil drawings are wonderful. Some pen drawings are wonderful. One is not better than the other.
Right, right.
And in printmaking, that is true as well. So those are the two primary forms of printmaking that Hirschfeld did. And sometimes he worked the stone. He always worked the stone.
And what do you mean when you say he worked the stone?
Oh, he drew on the stone.
Right.
For his prints up until Harlem, really up until Rhythm, in 1970, he actually physically drew on the stone. Mm-hmm. And that was often, he worked with a wide variety of printmakers to create the editions. His early prints were very small editions. You know, 50 was his biggest edition before 1970. Most of them were relatively small editions. And then after that, it was a much different type of process. So let's just start at the beginning. I think that's probably the way to go.
Well, I wanted to interject something real quick. When I first started working for the foundation, I did not know which was an etching, which was a lithograph. And, you know, it's hard to kind of tell at first glance which is which if you're not sure what you're looking at. But I find, and maybe this is wrong, David can correct me, but I find a really simple way to usually tell the difference, at least in Hirschfeld prints. I cannot speak to any other artist, but at least in Hirschfeld prints, a really simple way to tell if it's a lithograph or an etching is an etching. You can actually, if you feel the piece or if you look close enough, if you can get close enough to the print to look at it, you'll see that the etchings actually have like an outline of the plate into the paper. So if you're holding it in your hand and you're kind of rubbing your fingers over it, you can feel the indentation of the plate in an etching. Whereas a lithograph is much more You usually don't see that plate line.
No.
And it's all flat. It's all smooth all the way through.
Right.
But those etching, you can really, and we'll kind of give you some examples of what's an etching and what's a lithograph. But I always think of, I'm looking for the plate. You know, if right. you can see that plate, then it's usually an etching. Again, I cannot attest to any other artist, but with Hirschfeld prints, that's usually a pretty good indication of what you're looking at.
Yes, that's a good rule of thumb. The plate impression is something you're definitely going to see on an etching and which you won't see
correct.
In a lithograph just
right.
by the way the press works.
Right, right.
But that is an ideal way of, you know, right off the bat. You don't even have to be that close.
If it has a
box around it, or in the case of the Gershwins from 1990, mm-hmm. the plate shape was in the shape of a piano.
Right. And they'll often have a tone to the background or, you know, something like that where you can tell as well. Not always, but a lot of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
See, sometimes I do know what I'm talking about. Every once in a while. I've been working here 10 years.
Now we've got to go another 3 or 4 months. Yeah.
Well, let's start at the beginning of, because Hirschfeld prints, which he did pretty early.
Oh, very early in his career. And you may be surprised to learn that it almost predates most of the work that most people have seen. Well, Hirschfeld said that, in the world of Hirschfeld, he said, in common with every other artist who rose above the rank of Cretan, I too had a genuine lithograph stone in my studio to work on. And Hirschfeld had purchased his original lithograph press in Paris in, I think, his first trip there in 25, because we know that his first print that he did was a lithograph of a Parisian brothel that he called the Hook Shop. And it was sort of a gauzy view of prostitutes and their finely dressed johns. And some of the johns are sampling the merchandise, as one would say. And it alludes to Lautrec's work, because he certainly did scenes inside brothels. And it wouldn't have been out of place in Kenneth Hayes Miller's 14th Street School, which was this sort of, ideas of realism, you know, sort of real, you know, gritty realism. Hirschfeld took advantage of the texture of the stone lithograph to showcase really a rich spectrum of halftones, something you didn't see in his work. Already by 1926, it's pretty much exclusively black and white. But interestingly, in that same year, so when
which is 1926.
1926.
I don't think we mentioned, yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. 1926. He had gone to Paris in the fall of 1925. And I don't know exactly when he returns in 1926, but when he does one thing he never does for the rest of his life. He registers for a class. This is at the Art Students League. Remember, this is a 23-year-old guy. He takes a class in etching from Eugene Fitch, who was a well-known etcher and, in a strange quirk of fate, was really interested in stage images.
Oh,
and he had been a set designer, and a lot of his prints had to do with the theater. I mean, he was interested in the things in the theater that Don Freeman was interested
right,
in.
Right, behind
the
stage.
Yeah, the guys working off the lights stage. And things like that.
Yeah.
So it's just funny that Hirschfeld would be working with this person. And so what he does in this Art Students League class is he works on etchings. Primarily, he takes his drawings of Fez in Morocco that he had done in the winter of 25-26, and he transfers them into etchings. He takes charcoal studies, these charcoal drawings that he's done, and turns them into essentially line drawings in the etchings. But he really tries to capture the essence of the drawing. So shading is done through cross-hatching. And this is all representational work. This is like straight drawing. This is something that was not so unusual, I think, for students at the Art Students League. But we know he also was still fascinated by caricatures, because we have several prints of a caricature study.
It's like a page. It almost looks like a page out of a sketchbook.
Right.
Not Buster Keaton.
Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin. I'm thinking of Eddie Cantor.
Yes.
I was thinking of the eyes.
Patsy Kelly.
Yeah, Patsy Kelly.
I think Tom Mix is in
there. It's like just a bunch of heads.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, it's interesting that he's even exploring it then. He really, it's another example. You see that he even though he hasn't committed to caricature yet, image and pure line, it's getting there.
He's thinking about it.
Yeah. It would be another, believe it or not, 6 years. But, and remember, these things are done before he's ever published a theatrical caricature.
Right.
We know that he published his first caricature in April 1925, before he went to Paris. This is after his first visit to Paris. And before he is Hirschfeld, the theater caricaturist. Mm-hmm. So those early prints are... they were very, very small editions, and I don't think he really ever actively put them in exhibitions. Maybe at the time, we don't have any records of that, but these were really done for him more than anything else.
Experimentation.
Exactly. And we did a show at the Art Students League in 2007, and they had a copy of his registration card.
Oh, fun.
So we know how much he paid for his locker as well.
How much did he pay for his locker?
I think it was about a quarter.
Oh, my gosh. It's like an Aldi Aldi cart.
Yeah.
So you said it was going to be another 6 years until you kind of cut yourself off.
Well, it's another 6 years before he goes to Bali and commits himself to image and pure line.
Right.
And that's when a lot, in those 6 years, there's a lot of when these early prints are done.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next prints show up after his trip to Russia
right.
in 1928. And so, and these are much more, whereas the Hook Shop is very, I don't know, decadent. You know, you really get the sense of the brothel. The work from Russia is much more stark. There is an individual image of a Russian worker. And then there's one of a railway station in Kharkov.
Yeah. When you mentioned that Kharkov drawing, which I think is in Ukraine,
yes.
Actually. I was just thinking of, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but Louise Hirschfeld has a print of this Kharkov lithograph, and she restored it, had it restored. And it is just stunning.
Yes.
I mean, that paper is pure white. And the lines, oh my gosh, it's just so lovely.
It's beautiful.
Because these old, we have a lot of these old lithographs. We have several copies of a lot of them.
We like to think of them as historic.
Yes, but they're very old.
Yes.
As you can imagine, the paper is very faded and, you know, they're mostly yellow at this point. But that one she has that she restored is just, oh, I would have that on my wall.
It looks like it was just printed.
It does. It does. It looks so fresh and beautiful.
And, you know, I think that piece was created. He had relatives. His family, his mother's family had come from that region.
Right.
Of what was then Russia and is now Ukraine. And
what was actually then Soviet Union.
Right, exactly.
Sorry, former Russian major. Just wanted to make sure we knew that.
But he had family from, and so he was probably in the railway station. I mean, that was probably taken from a very, you know, he had visited his relatives, and he saw the scene in a railway station.
Yeah, that's neat.
And these prints are very different from the Hirschfeld we know from the newspaper.
Oh, for sure, yes.
These are much more tonal works. They are much more, they're like Ashcan school prints, because they show a side of life that is not exactly the nicest part of life.
Right.
It's everyday people doing everyday things.
He often kind of viewed prints as the people's artwork.
Yes.
Correct. And I don't know if this came from his visit to the Soviet Union or if it was something he had already kind of formed, but because they're mass produced and more affordable for people to hang in their homes, it kind of is, the artwork of the people. Or can
right.
You,
yeah. Well, prints in general are a way for artists to get their work into more people's hands, because there's only one Mona Lisa, but if Da Vinci had done a print of Mona Lisa and made 100 of them, there'd right. be 100 Mona Lisas.
Right.
So, yes, the small d democratic quality of printmaking, I think, always appealed to Hirschfeld. Mm. I think what he found in Russia was something that confirmed his feelings. Mm-hmm. At that time when he was in Moscow, you know, there was a very much a sense of doing things for the people. Mm. So I think that fit right in with his own cosmology, as it were. But, you know, at the same time he's doing these Russian pieces the same year, he also does a lithograph of a can-can dancer.
Right.
And this image of a can-can dancer with her leg up in the air is one that appears repeatedly in Hirschfeld's work. I mean, for almost the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. When he does the rhythm series in the 1970s, he essentially recreates that.
I'm thinking of the, is it the Greenwich Village in the 40s? There's it's a long piece. It's a long rectangular piece.
I know which one you're talking about. In West, I think it's like West Side nightclubs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wonderful. You can see it in his Big City, you know, for the film Big City. He did some promo pieces. It's there. Mm-hmm. When he wants to show the activity of the city.
Speaking of Toulouse-Lautrec.
Right. Very much so. I mean, and I think he would have understood that, whether consciously or unconsciously. So he had a lot of a lot of connection to Lautrec that is only now becoming really apparent.
Now there's a set of 10 lithographs. I think it's 10 lithographs because I've seen the brochure.
Right.
where he does a bunch of different scenes again in this tonal charcoal type. Type style. When do those come?
These are all, he's doing all of these. Mm. When he does those 10 prints by Hirschfeld booklets, which I think was published sometime around the mid to late 30s.
I was thinking 36.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I think it's around that time. What's so great about it, he not only has these 10 prints, but he gives us the year.
All the information, where it was printed, how many were printed.
And who printed it.
Yeah.
You know, because he worked with some of the top printmakers of the time. George Miller, who would work with a lot of artists like Rockwell Kent, pulled some of Hirschfeld's early prints. The Hook Shop was pulled in Paris. We know it was done there. So these early prints are fascinating because they are very different from his published work, you know, the work that he was doing for newspapers and for film studios. They were scenes of New York. There's scenes of London. We know there's scenes from Russia, scenes from Paris. They fit into what was happening in printmaking in America at the time.
Right.
There was a real renaissance of printmaking. And certainly the idea of art for all was a big part of it. So it was just, there were whole galleries and businesses set up to create prints of well-known artists. Mm-hmm. And I think Hirschfeld was just part, it wasn't that he was the well-known artist, it was just something he wanted to do. Like he said, every artist he knew was doing it.
Mm-hmm, right. All the cool kids.
There's a great one. In 1931 is a really good year. He does the Arden Industry, which shows a scene in front of the British Museum of an artist with all of his artwork. And, you know, it's great graphic satire because in the corner of the print, you see a dog peeing on one of the canvases. You know, it's just like the indignity of it all. You see the whole thing from the viewpoint of, you know, you see all these people's feet walking by and the artist's, you know, desperate to have somebody buy something and this dog is peeing on his canvas. There's a great image of the Dizzy Club, which is sort of the New York sort of counterpart to the Hook Shop. And then there's La Cervette au Cou, this sort of very rotund gourmand eating escargot. It's a really wonderful piece. And I can say that because I have it in my collection.
Well, I was going to save that for the end. We can talk about the pieces we have.
Oh, okay. By all means.
Okay. Let's go now to 1941, where we have Harlem as seen by Hirschfeld, which is, of course, his baby that he was very proud of. Yeah, very proud of. A big art book that included 24 lithographs, 20 of Harlem, and 4 scenes from Bali.
Right. Now, this is a different type of printmaking than anything he's done up until this point.
Right. So let's explain. So this is color?
Yes, this is color. This was done for a book. These were lithographs that were tipped into an oversized art book published by Hyperion Press, which seems to have existed for exactly 1 year and produced probably about 10 or 15 different oversized art books.
Yeah, what would you say the dimensions are? 24 by
14? No, I think it's probably like 16 by 20. So Hyperion Press in 1941 published these oversized books on Degas, Goya. There's a wonderful book of a French artist on, you know, it's a book of images of women in the text is by Janet Flanner, who was a correspondent for The New Yorker in Paris at that time. These were really high grade, wonderful books, but they were probably more than the market could bear in 1941. And as we know, when Hirschfeld's book came out, the publisher went bankrupt.
Well, it also came out December 7th, 1941. So that I don't think it was entirely Hirschfeld's fault. and I stand corrected. The book is 13.78 by 18.5 inches.
Right. That makes sense.
But it is a big, I mean, maybe I often am prone to grandiose thoughts.
Exaggeration.
Yes, exaggeration. So, but it is still a very large book. You could not put this on your bookshelf.
No, what the coffee table was created
for. Yes, that it is a coffee table in itself. Yeah. So it was published December 7th, 1941, which of course is Pearl Harbor. So people were not in the market to buy a big, beautiful art book.
Right. And that was a limited edition of 1,000 copies in which the copies were numbered. The prints themselves were not numbered.
Right, right.
And the prints themselves were not signed. They were signed in the plate, if they were signed at all. And then let me just tell you, this was a different type of printmaking than anything he had done before. He got the contract to do this book, and I'm sure he started wanting to figure out how he was going to make 1,000 prints of 24 different images. And his friend Don Freeman tells him, I know how we're going to do it. I feel a little bit like Catherine because I don't know exactly what they said. But that's never stopped her.
Oh, I can tell you what they said. Hirschfeld's like, hey, Donnie, I've got this contract to do this book. I have to do 24 prints of 100 or 1,000 copies each. That's like 24,000 prints. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And Don's like, Hirschfeld, I know just the place. I do prints all the time. We'll go to
the Brooklyn Home for the Blind.
No, that honest to God. That sounds made up.
No, it is honest to God. That's okay. What he told me.
So
that's
he said, we'll go to the Brooklyn Home for the Blind. This is where I do my prints for some odd reason.
No. So let me say, I don't know where Don Freeman did his prints. I'm not sure he did it at the Brooklyn Home for the Blind.
Done it at, yeah.
But he knew they had a multi-lith machine at the Brooklyn Home for the Blind. Why? We don't know. That's not our reason for being here. This is what Hirschfeld told me. And there... because they were color prints, you can't, the printing process at that time meant that he had to make a plate for each color.
For each color, right. That's what I was trying to get to in the beginning. This is not a one plate print. So every single color had to be applied to the paper separately.
Correct.
So if there's, like, I'm looking at Apollo Corrine here, there's one, two, four different colors at least. And so that means there would at least be four different plates that he drew on and then pressed into the paper.
Right. That's, you don't have any mix of colors.
Right.
You know,
that's time consuming.
It is. Now, the multi-lith machine were these thin, I don't know if they were aluminum or metal of some sort. They were these very thin plates that you hooked on to essentially almost like a roller.
Right.
And you turned a crank to make these prints.
Oh, wow.
And... I mean, as evidence of, we know that Don Freeman worked with him, is we have some Harlem prints that were printed on the back of Don Freeman prints.
Right, yeah, those are cool. Yeah.
They're proofs of both of their prints, and they were just obviously testing things out.
Right. We also have a lot of copies of these Harlem prints where the colors are much different than what they ended up being at the end. So Hirschfeld is still kind of experimenting with what colors he wanted to use. So, like, I'm looking at Jam Session, which is probably my favorite Harlem print, I think. But I know we have a lot of different versions. A lot of different variations of this this one print.
Without a doubt. They couldn't have gotten it right. It would be very unusual for them to get it right the first time.
Now, by the time the book was published, they would all look exactly the same.
Well, of course. Once they figured out what they wanted, you know, how it was going to work, then they would crank out 1,000 prints.
Right.
They actually produced at least 1,050 prints because Hirschfeld's plan was to do exhibitions of the prints, and he would sign those prints, and he would number those prints. And he did about 5 of each one for a show that he had in 1942, right after the book came out, and of which he sold absolutely nothing of. And so he never numbered any more prints. He never signed any more of the Hirschfeld prints. And the Harlem prints. The book itself is not signed. It is only numbered, and it was probably not numbered by Al Hirschfeld. But, you know, the sort of disaster that was Harlem for him, although he loved the prints and they lined the hallway to his studio, so he saw them every day of his life from the time he made them, it was such a disaster that it really curtailed his printmaking after that.
Right.
I think the only other print he may have made in 1941... Or it might have been 1942, is an image of Joe Gould.
Right.
The
Professor Siegel.
Yes, Professor Siegel.
I tell a great Joe Gould story.
It may even be true, folks.
It's not, but I tell a great story.
But Gould was a bohemian eccentric who was supposedly writing the history of the United States based on overheard conversations. He, for a drink, he would speak in Siegel. That's where he got the name Professor Siegel. And if you have never read the Joseph Mitchell stories, Professor Siegel or Joe Gould's Secret, I want you to pause this podcast, go out and buy Up in the Old Hotel by Joseph Mitchell and read both of those, and then you can start again. But and why he did this print of Joe Gould, who he was friendly with, I don't know. I have ideas, but it's such rank speculation, it's not worth sharing with you here.
Back to Harlem. The other part of the disaster of Harlem is the warehouse in which all the book copies of the book were kept once they didn't sell, flooded, or did the roof cave in?
The roof leaked, and so some of the edition was destroyed.
A lot of it, they're highly collectible now. To find one intact with all of the prints inside, very rare.
And it's going to run you about $5,000.
Yeah, that would be, I think, a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah.
So if you find one, it's worth the investment.
And I've been doing this for a while now, a couple of decades. And only recently, Hirschfeld had copies of Harlem.
Right.
But I have to say that his copies weren't in the greatest shape.
No.
Because he touched
them. He was not an archivist.
He liked to pull it out. He probably showed a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, and the spines usually go on these things quickly. After Harlem, really, the fiasco of Harlem, he puts printmaking aside. He really focuses on what he does best. You know, the entertainment world, performers. He's got plenty of work. He doesn't need confirmation of his artistic abilities. He's very confident in what he's doing. And it's only because a fellow, George Goodstadt, contacts him in 1969. George is running something called the Bank Street Atelier down on Bank Street downtown. And he has been inviting well-known artists to come to the atelier, work with master printmakers to create prints that, of course, George Goodstadt would later sell. And it was a good deal for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was getting work. I never asked either one of them how that, you know, what exactly started it. But Hirschfeld was always interested in experimentation. And he went down there and started working. He started working on stones. And he created a set of prints, 10 different prints of dancers in different settings. These were not specific dancers.
Right. It's not Baryshnikov and Fred Astaire. It's just dancers.
Right.
Yeah. Dance. It's actually really like dance. Are they called dance moves? That
right.
sounds like
poses.
It's hip hop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pas de deux, passe relevé, all kinds of ballet moves.
But well, there's also a one of the Charleston.
Yeah.
There's one of a clown.
Yeah.
Lagong Bali.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's
it really captures a lot of different interests.
And
that
this
Herschel
is had. This is called the Rhythm Series.
Yes.
This is what we refer
it was,
to.
When it was published by Goodstead, it came in a portfolio, a slate blue portfolio that said Hirschfeld Rhythm. It had an oversized introduction by Brooks Atkinson that was the same size as the prints that talked about Hirschfeld and his print work. And it must the edition size, I think, was about 120. And it must have done well because they start to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And by the early 70s, George Goodstack, he closes the Bank Street Atelier, but he really gets into printmaking. And he becomes Hirschfeld's print publisher. And Hirschfeld does some new images. There's a great W.C. Fields, Buster Keaton, that he does specifically for prints.
Right.
And these, Goodstadt introduces Hirschfeld to Emilio Cerini,
mm-hmm.
who was a very well-known printmaker, who was working with all the New York artists, Robert Motherwell, Franz Klein, Jackson Pollock, William Gropper, who was a good friend of Hirschfeld's, Leonard Baskin, Raphael Sawyer, Jack Levine. So he was the go-to guy, I think. And so working with him, he did really great work. The backgrounds of the etchings that you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
that's Cerini's work.
Gotcha.
As much as it is Hirschfeld. The printmaker and the artist would talk about what the print should be. Cerini would work the plate and add the background. And of course, when he finished, he would provide a proof to Hirschfeld. And Hirschfeld might say, the sepia tone in the background is a little too much.
Mm.
Or, you know, they would make revisions.
Right.
And Cerini would go back and tweak it. And I'm sure the first prints were a lot of back and forth. But after a few, they understood what they were about.
Wanted. Yeah.
And they produced great prints. And Cerini worked with Hirschfeld up and through the 90s.
Mm.
Really remarkable guy. I met him a handful of times. Very nice, quiet, but obviously very devoted to what he was doing. And so it's really Goodstadt that gives us the contemporary Hirschfeld print. You know, it's working with Hirschfeld. He gets Hirschfeld back into printmaking and provides him with an outlet to sell the work. Because Hirschfeld wasn't, you know, he wasn't out selling prints. The way it worked with print publishers is the publisher would approach Hirschfeld once they agreed on using either an existing image or one that he would create for it. If it was going to create something for an edition, he was paid for that particular piece. And then he was paid for each print he signed. First in money, usually, I mean, it was $60 at the end of his career, probably at the beginning, it might've been $25. But in 1970, $25 was a lot more money.
Right.
Than
and that would
think.
Be per print he signed.
He right.
would get $25.
So an edition of 100 prints, he would make $2,500 from signing the prints.
Not a bad deal.
And he would get in each edition, if it was an edition of 100, they would usually make 10 or 15 artist proofs. And Hirschfeld would get nearly all of those.
Mm-hmm. And that is in addition to the standard edition.
Correct.
Right. So it's 100 prints in the edition, but then there will be an additional 10 or 15 artist proofs for a total of 110 or 115 prints.
Yes. And now I want to address something right here, right now, because a lot of people don't understand this.
Yeah.
A lot of print collectors get very connected to the numbers.
Mm.
Oh, I want a low number.
Right, right.
And somehow that
means... Or people have a lucky number. I want number 24,
right.
You know.
And, you know, if you have a lucky number, you know, that's a good reason for that.
Sure,
and it doesn't make a difference. But the idea that a low number is better than a higher number is all in our heads.
Right.
Because the prints, the number does not indicate when it came off the press.
No.
Because when you do an edition of 100, the printmaker pulls the prints and lays them out on a table to dry.
Right. Yeah.
You can't just pack them up right away. But the printmaker is typically not the guy who collects the prints once they're dry. It's a gopher. It's a studio gopher. Function. Not literally a gopher.
Was that on this podcast I learned what the word gopher meant?
Yes, indeed.
Was it? I thought it was a gopher, like a woodchuck.
This is a G-O-F-E-R.
No, yeah. Well, it's really a G-O-F-O-R. Go for this.
No,
but you
gopher.
Spell it gopher. Yeah. So that was mind-blowing moment number 700.
For any of you children out there who are studying for the spelling bee, you've just gotten a word. Gopher.
But yeah, it doesn't. So it was just some person.
Right.
So it was just a worker who was collecting.
They would collect up the prints in whatever order was convenient for them to collect up the prints. They would put it typically into packages of 25. Mm. They would be numbered at the printmaker studio.
Yeah. I wanted to say Hirschfeld did not number the prints. No. I mean, the labor that it would take to do that and write out his signature.
Right.
Would make it a $50 print instead of a $25 print.
Well, and that was just part of what the services that the printmaker offered. And typically the person who numbered the print might be different from the person who collected the print.
Sure, right.
And different than the person who printed the print.
Right.
So, and then there comes the messenger who picks up the packages and brings them up to Hirschfeld's studio. And he doesn't sign number one first.
No, right.
He might sign 75 first and do 75 to 100, then do 26 through 50. You know, it's...
Yeah, so the idea that one number is more valuable than the other is also just not a thing.
It doesn't
matter.
Like so much in art, it's your relationship to it.
Sure, yeah.
But the quality of the print... number one and number 100
should be exactly the same.
And yeah. I would defy anybody to take any of these Hirschfeld prints say this one's different than that one. Mm-hmm. And the artist proofs are the same way because that 115 prints were printed at the same time.
Yeah.
And the ones that were designated artist proofs was done by somebody who was neither the artist or probably the printer.
Right.
They were just numbering the prints and they knew there were 15 artist proofs. So they got AP 1 over 15, 2 over 15.
And that's what AP stands for if you see that on a Hirschfeld print. AP 1 over 5 stands for artist proof, 1 over 5.
And artist proofs comes from a time when the artist would be pulling the print off his own press. And these were ones that he was experimenting with, that he was figuring out what to do.
Gotcha.
That's not true in contemporary printmaking. It's so much more of a mechanical process where the prints are identical to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Artist proofs typically are considered more valuable in the collecting community because they are closer to the artist. And indeed, the prints that the foundation offers, the ones that were left to the foundation by Hirschfeld to sell to support activities of the foundation, these are artist proofs.
Yeah. So what's on our shop are artist proofs. Is there a straggler here and there of something from the standard edition? Yes.
Every once in a while.
Yeah. But we sell the artist proofs. That's what we have.
And so with Goodstead, he started, you know, they were very popular. You know, in the early days, you could have gotten a framed print of Barbara Streisand for $125. And you could get it at Bloomingdale's.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I will say this. George Goodstadt was very shrewd.
Yeah.
He understood what people wanted. He understood how to offer it. And he understood artists. Mm. He and Hirschfeld became great friends. I mean, very close.
Yeah.
George was to be one of the executors of Hirschfeld's estate. And it's just... Hirschfeld's, you know, very long life. George lived to be 76, 77 years old. He died a year before Hirschfeld at 99 and a half. So that was tough. That was tough for Hirschfeld, and it was tough for the people who loved George and the Hirschfeld print market because there was nobody else quite like him. One set of prints we haven't talked about, which I think are probably his most adventurous series, was in 1975, he was invited to Japan to see the arts and culture of Japan. They understood that he was very influenced by Japanese artists. And so he went there. And of course, what did they take him to? Kabuki Theater. Mm. And Hirschfeld was interested. He did a lot of sketches there. And he came back to America and worked on a series of 12 kabuki prints that in color, you know, vivid, unlike anything else you're going to see in Hirschfeld's work. The kabuki series is as close as he got to Japanese, the Japanese woodcuts that mm-hmm. were so important to him forming his artistic sensibility. And it was, in a way, it was a real homage. You know, here's a man in his 70s who is paying tribute to the prints that got him started.
Right.
I love those prints. But, you know, in terms of prints, we get to see the prints all the time. We both have prints in our...
We do.
Tell me what prints you have.
Oh, well, let's see. Well, should I do it chronologically?
I may not do mine chronologically.
Well, I'll at least attempt to do mine chronologically. The first piece I have is one of the early lithographs, which is Chelsea Pub. We didn't mention Chelsea Pub, but that's one of those early lithographs with the charcoal tones.
The black and white ones.
I got that. I stole that at auction, basically. I did not pay $300 with shipping and buyer's premium, and it's in great condition. We have that over our little bar
that we have
in our dining room, and I like that piece a lot. It's fun to look at.
It's really wonderful.
Yeah. The other piece I have an Elvis 1968.
Oh, right.
Which is probably my favorite one.
Yes.
You know me. I love Elvis. But speaking of this piece, actually, if you take a look at this piece, this Elvis 68 was done for the 68 special, of course, and then made into a print. It's like a spotlight.
Right.
And so would that be what Sereny would
yes.
add? Right.
Yeah.
So,
And that, whether they talked about it before he did it or whether he did it in his proofing process, I don't know. But Hirschfeld obviously approved
it. It's very effective. So it's Elvis, but you'll see that tone of, you know, it's just two tones in the, which form a spotlight on Elvis. And so I just thought I would mention that.
No, it's a great piece.
I have a Chaplin from behind that... Classic. I mean, does every Chaplin film end with him walking out into the sunset? But it's that classic Chaplin piece, which I also really like. And then I guess I have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I have one of our newest prints. Now, this is not a hand-signed limited edition Hirschfeld print.
Right.
This is Reba McEntire in Annie Get Your Gun. Signed by Reba. Actually, it says, love Reba, as I like to say. I think that does make it more valuable because it has Reba's love in it. But this is a Broadway Cares print.
Yes.
Shameless plug for our Broadway Cares series.
End of July, we're having another sale.
Another sale, which Reba will be in.
Yes.
You can have this. You can bid on a Reba print.
And that Reba image is in color.
It is in color. It's beautiful. I like it a lot. It's fun.
And for those of you who don't know, starting in 2020, we did a series of very special prints, small edition. There's no more than 15 in any of these, and some a little bit less. Prints that obviously were not signed by Hirschfeld, but are signed by the performers in them. And they are sold to raise money for Broadway Cares and for the Al Hirschfeld Foundation. And we do an annual sale. And this year it's going to be the last 2 weeks of July on Charity Buzz.
Right, right. They're great pieces.
They're really great pieces.
I also have a bonus Hirschfeld print, which is a photograph he took in the 30s of Times Square that I think was a project of Louise's.
Well, Louise found these
photos. And... Yeah, that Hirschfeld. Because like in the 30s, I mean, a camera was probably a pretty cool thing to like have and be experimenting with. And he took all these different photos of just, you know, he was trying to be artsy, he'd be hipster Hirschfeld, I guess, in the 30s, taking all these really artsy photos. But Louise had him sign a number. I think there's like one of 10, you know, right. There are like 10 of each maid. And I do have one of those hanging. It's actually a really cool photo of what I assume is Broadway in the 30s.
Right. It's a really great piece.
Yeah. That's a bonus one. It's not what we think of when we think of Hirschfeld prints. Yeah, but how many people have a Hirschfeld photography
print? Signed photo.
Signed, yeah. They're... And I do not have any original drawings. But one day I hope to make enough to buy the What's My Line TV guide.
We do check her bag every day when they she's do. Leaving they the office. They make me
open it up and say, Catherine, is that TV guide drawing in here?
Again.
No, not today. Still safe in storage. David, what's on your wall?
Oh, well, there's a couple of pieces on my wall. If I'm going to do it in chronological order, the first one is Lindy Hop from the Harlem series. That was a gift from Alan Louise Hirschfeld, and it is one of the signed Lindy Hops. I love that piece. I love all the Harlem pieces, but that one is particularly great. Mm. Another piece that the Hirschfelds gave me was the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Which I, you know, I've seen it thousands of times, and it's wonderful. But I can tell you that seeing the print, where you can really look at every piece, and it's big, and it's wonderful, it's better than I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you had that for a long time in the office. And I kept saying, David, you should get this framed. You got to frame this. And he was like, oh, I don't, you know, I'll get to it. And finally, like a year ago, you had it framed. It looks stunning in a frame. I mean, it makes it look so different when it's matted and framed.
Without a doubt.
And you hang it in your house and now you love it. So you should listen to me more often, really. This is what this all comes down to.
I knew it was going to end up someplace like that.
It really does look really nice. Yeah. It's a beautiful piece.
A print that I have that I forgot is La Servette au Cou.
Right. One of those early lithographs.
I love it. I found it in an auction. It had some light damage. So I'm going to take it out and have it restored because it's exquisite.
Yeah,
it's
I really know you like that piece a lot. Yeah. That's funny. We both have an early lithograph.
Yeah, that really we love. Yeah, you know, yeah.
They're so different. You don't see them, and they're so different from everything else.
Right, and they're very valuable. I mean, let that's the thing to look at. We don't sell them, but if you see them in an auction, the foundation doesn't sell any. We weren't lucky enough to get any of those to sell. But if you see them in an auction, sometimes they don't go for a lot of money because they're not classic Hirschfelds.
They're not collectible. People don't know what they are. They're not of a personality.
They're exquisite.
Yeah, they're really exquisite.
And then I have two prints that I was responsible in creating.
Mm.
The Philadelphia Orchestra conductors. You know, I shepherded that project all the way through.
That's a beautiful piece.
I love that piece. I don't have that hanging on my wall just because there's only so much space on the walls. But
maybe it'll be a movie situation. And you'll be like, oh, I appreciate this piece so much more now that it's hanging in my house.
It's true. And the last piece I have is a piece called The Summit. It's Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., and Dean Martin. I was involved in the creation of that.
Yeah.
And so I have one of those
prints.
That's
a nice one.
It is a nice print.
You've forgotten a print. Oh, I know a print David has hanging in his house that he's forgotten about. Ooh, I can't. Yeah.
That I have hanging in my house. You do have
a print. Yeah, David also has two original drawings, which are also exquisite. But I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about another print that's hanging in your house. Oh, I feel.
Oh,
I have butterflies.
Because that's not mine. I feel so proud.
Oh, it's not yours. Okay.
So when our son Henry was born, there was a wonderful collector by the name of Joe Erdelak. Who was a character through and through, but a guy who early on realized that Hirschfeld was a very highly collectible artist, and he collected some exquisite pieces.
He had the original of that Elvis 68 that I have the print of. He had the original drawing of that. Yeah,
he had so many great originals.
He knew what he was looking at and what he was doing. Yeah.
And right after Hirschfeld died, he put them up for auction because...
That big swan auction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really great. But a really nice guy, great guy. And of course, when Henry was born, sent him a announcement because I'm a proud parent. And I didn't, we didn't know each other that well.
Right.
I didn't expect anything from him. But one day a crate comes.
Mm.
And inside the crate is a Ringo Starr print by Hirschfeld.
Nice.
Beautiful with its, it's in a circular format.
Yeah, it's got a green background.
Yeah. It's so, and it's a mottled green. It's really exquisite. And that has been hanging in Henry's room since he was a baby. And it's really a great piece.
That is
yeah, so I had forgotten about that one because it's not technically
It's not
mine.
Yours, but it's hanging in your house.
Yes.
Speaking of baby gifts.
Yes.
If we want to do a little inside baseball here.
Sure.
I brought a baby gift that my baby, who was just born, received that I wanted to show off.
What do you
mean? It's semi-Hirschfeld related.
Why don't you describe to the folks
at
home?
Why don't you describe it, David? This is from our dear friend Tracy Gossel, who sent my baby. A wonderful person
and also the author of a great biography of Douglas Fairbanks.
Yes.
Senior,
not junior. No.
The First King of Hollywood. Yep. If you want to know about Fairbanks, that is the book to get. It has everything.
I can't imagine there's another book to get.
Well, she sent you a silver spoon with Douglas Fairbanks' picture on it.
Engraved on the top.
Yeah. Along with his...
His autograph. Yeah, engraved on the handle of the spoon.
So, I mean...
I have to find a way to display this in my baby's room. It's not going to be as easy to hang on the wall as, say, a Ringo Starr print. But I thought I would show it off.
It is a great piece.
Since baby gifts came up.
Yes.
How many people can say they have a Douglas Fairbanks spoon?
One could ask how many people would want to say they have a Douglas Fairbanks.
Well, I'm proud. I'm the proud.
I'm proud. Proud owner. I'm one of the few. I'm proud.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about your baby.
Oh, my baby, Robert Presley Eastman. Speaking of Elvis,
there you go.
He was born February 23rd, and he is happy and healthy. He's 12 weeks old now at this recording. He might be 4 months old by the time this comes out. But he is. We call him Bobby. And he loves to come to work. He loves to look at, right now, he's working on archiving Hirschfeld photographs. And he's doing a great job.
He's doing a great job. I wish he could get his mother to do as much work as he is
doing. Well, if he's going to do the work, I'm not going to do the work.
That family only gets one paycheck, folks. They split it up however they need to.
But he's doing great. Thank you.
Oh, he's a wonderful addition to the Hirschfeld Foundation family. We love having him come into the office. You might have seen his name on one of the videos that Doug Koons has made for us.
It was very sweet. Yeah. I sent it to my whole family. They were all very proud. Well, what is not on your wall that you would like on your wall, David? Because people, I mean, this does happen. You know, people, I remember this one lady in particular just gave me no instructions.
Right.
And she wanted to buy a print. Her daughter's name was Nina. That's right. Why she wanted... This was at the Harmony Club.
Right.
And her daughter's name was Nina. She wanted to buy her Hirschfeld print.
Right.
Okay, that sounds great. You know, what does your daughter like? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. And her daughter's like 24 years old. She just graduated college. Okay, does she... You know, this is me. Does she like... She's like, movies? I don't know. I don't think so. What about music? You know, does she like music? Maybe Madonna, Barbara Streisand? I don't think so. I don't think music's really your thing. TV? I mean, this gate lady has given me no instructions. And she doesn't know anything about her daughter. But I'm going to make the sale. This lady's going to leave with the Hirschfeld print.
She always gets her man.
So I kind of get out the catalog. I just like, I'm going through every single print. And she lives in New York, the daughter. So
right.
I did pick out a great piece for her. I picked out Audrey Hepburn and Breakfast at Tiffany's with a croissant, which has a huge Nina right across I think it's her dress that's draped.
Right.
It's got this massive Nina right across it. And it's like a, you know, sophisticated young New York type drawing. So that was the piece she bought, and I was very proud of myself because this lady gave me nothing to work on other than her daughter's name was Nina and she was young and lived in New York. So, but anyway, so sometimes people ask, what would you pick? And people do ask that, you know, I'm deciding between these two pieces. What would you pick? And I'll give them my honest answer. It might be the cheaper print too. And I'll tell them, I'm going to be honest, I would go with this one. I know it's, you know, less money. It's not a good, I'm not a good salesman in that way.
We're not
salesmen. I want to put the right piece on the wall and the best piece.
Right.
So David, what would, you know, what's missing from your wall that you would,
I wouldn't mind an Algonquin round table.
Oh, sold out, David.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have any of those.
I surprisingly do not have the Grateful Dead.
That is actually shocking.
I may have to do something about that. But
that is actually shocking.
Not sure.
Now, would you do the Grateful Dead or would you do the 1995 Jerry Garcia?
I like the Grateful Dead better. I like seeing all the band. I like, it's really one of those great images that even the Grateful Dead, members of the Grateful Dead, have thought it's a great image.
Now, you have really tall ceilings. And I know we do have a banner of the Grateful Dead.
Oh, that's true.
I think Laura, I don't think she would mind.
No, she would. I got a wall for that.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to suggest, very late in Hirschfeld's career, a publisher asked him to do this image of Charlie Chaplin seen from the back.
Yeah.
It was very similar to
what I have.
What you have. And the publisher decided to make it 5 feet tall.
It's massive. It's as tall as me.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Obnoxiously large, right,
is what it is. Yeah.
Right. Some, you know, when you see like a 3-sheet or something like that, and these big posters.
Yeah, but that's a nice poster.
Right.
That's one thing.
There's a lot of things that are wonderful in that way.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, it's wonderful, but it's too big.
Yeah.
But so what prints would you have on your wall?
Well, I do have as you know, I have a long wish list of prints.
No, there's not a What's My Line print. I don't know
there
why you're asking.
There is not, and we need to make one. Well, the first one that I would like is the Jack Lemmon in tribute.
Folks, her birthday's coming up. It's Christmas.
I
do
love
something about
that Jack. It's, I mean, and I think nobody's going to argue with you. It's a great drawing of Jack Lemmon or not of Jack Lemmon. You know, it's just
a great
drawing. And so I would pick that one. For my husband, I'm on the hunt for a Sopranos print because he loves the Sopranos, and I'll put that on my wall. That's also a nice drawing.
Oh, that's a great piece.
I'd like to give, though, a little shout out, a little tribute. The other print I wouldn't mind hanging on my wall is Frank Ferrante as Groucho.
Oh.
Because that is my favorite Groucho drawing.
Really? Wow.
I think it's just it's fun. I like the pose he's doing. It's, you know, very classic.
Right.
It just happens to be a Frank Ferrante as well.
Right.
But I think people read it first and foremost as Groucho. It's marketed as Groucho, A Life in Review. Just happens to be someone who's portraying Groucho.
I gotta be honest with you, I would probably take some Marx Brothers prints.
Yeah, that's my favorite Marx Brothers print, is that Frank Ferrante is Groucho.
I also like Swing Quartet.
Oh, that's a
nice
one.
That's a great one.
That's a nice one.
I like the Liza Minnelli. Both.
Oh, Minnelli.
Yeah, the late color one is incredible. But I gotta tell you, Cabaret is pretty special too.
Cabaret. That's another one with that spotlight effect.
Yeah,
that original 1975 one.
I love the older Duke Ellington, the one that he did in 73.
David loves this. Oh, I thought you were talking about the.
Oh, I love both of those. I love the one he did in 1931.
Yeah.
And I love this one he did in 1973. There's just something about them that are just special.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he captured Ellington so well.
Mm.
But I could go on. I mean, there's just so many that I like.
Yeah.
And very few that I would not put on the wall.
Yeah, there were very few I wouldn't. Maybe the Reva Schneerson.
No,
I wouldn't hang on the wall.
Becker.
Geraldo Rivera.
Right.
Diane
Warren. The founders of J&R Music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we had a Hirschfeld Jeopardy at our holiday office party last year.
A crazy office party.
And there were several questions about prints.
Yes.
One being, what is the smallest Hirschfeld? print.
What is the smallest...
You remember the answer. You ended up getting it, I believe.
Is it... I know what it is. Mont Blanc de Culture.
It's actually the United Nations.
Oh, right. it is... That is one I would probably not put up on.
It's like an 8 by 10.
United Nations Postal Chiefs.
No.
No.
Wings? No.
Not going to have you wings. We did have one print of Beverly Hills 90210 that I never thought that anybody would want. Its day has gone. And we put it up on the website and it sold in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was insane. It was crazy.
I really did never think.
No idea. And that was the only one we had and somebody wanted it. That was a great day.
Here's another one I love. The Gershwins.
The Gershwins
that originally
with the
appeared
piano.
In 1955. Not the one in the... I love that one, too. The one with the piano-shaped etching plate. This is the 1955 drawing that was published in 1981.
That's a better drawing. Yeah.
It's a nicer drawing. To me, it's classic Gershwin. And so I like some of those older images because they're really... I don't know. They just feel special to me. Yeah. Maybe it's the ones that I knew because George Goodstadt used to always have a little ad in the New York Times magazine and there would be a print there. And, you know, years before I started working with Hirschfeld, you would see these prints and they were always like, oh, that's charming. That's great. Oh, I love that piece. The prints, and here's the last thing I'll say about the prints. So when the prints were first published, you could have bought them pretty cheaply. And they go up in value. It's non-usual for prints to appreciate in value over time. It's a supply and demand
situation. Right, especially as the edition starts to sell out. Now it's much more limited than it was even as a limited edition print.
And we take limited edition very seriously.
We do.
These are not prints that are going to come out in some other fashion.
So like, for example, the Broadway Cares prints we do.
Right.
We don't... like if Barbara, or the perfect example is Bette Midler.
Right.
Broadway Cares wanted to do a Bette Midler print. Well, there's only two drawings of Bette Midler and they're both already limited edition prints. So we were not able, we refused to make a new print of those two images. So what we did is we sent Bette Midler the original limited edition prints to sign.
Right.
So, you know, those are signed, but we will not make a new print out of an image that is already a limited edition print.
Correct. Correct.
And we are very serious about it.
Yeah, you will. We've taken people to court and won who decided that they should make more prints.
Of a limited edition print, absolutely.
And when they're limited because, you know, if they're etchings, the plate is called, it's effaced, which means that it is either destroyed or they do a strike through.
Right.
Where you can't
print it. And I've seen those come up on eBay sometimes.
Right. Look, they're never going to get any cheaper.
No, we never lower prices on the website.
Right. Right.
As things sell, the price goes up.
And these are the prints that Hirschfeld left to support activities of the foundation. So when you're buying it, you're not only getting a great work of art to hang on your wall, but you're helping children get an art education. You're helping bring Hirschfeld's art to new audiences. You're helping the foundation do everything that it does.
Absolutely. You know? I always, when I email... you know, when you purchase a print and I email you, you know, giving you your tracking number and everything, I always say thank you for supporting the Al Hirschfeld Foundation because that's what you're doing.
Right. And every print that you get from the Al Hirschfeld Foundation comes with a certificate of authenticity from the one place that is really can authenticate your piece, which is the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
Yes.
So
I have one more piece of trivia. I forgot. One more piece of trivia.
We're almost out of here, folks.
What is... Now, David, if you know the answer, which I'm pretty sure you've forgotten by now, but if you know the answer, hold for 10 seconds. We'll let the audience think about it. What is, since we created the website, which I think, well, the prints have been up, I guess, for what, 5 years, six years? What is the top-selling Hirschfeld hand-signed limited edition print from the Al Hirschfeld Foundation? No, we don't want copyright claims.
Okay.
David, do you know the answer?
I do know the answer.
Give us the answer.
The Thin Man.
Ding, 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 ding.
William Powell and Myrna Loy.
Correct. We have sold more of those prints than any other. And I think there's only one left. It's now $9,000.
But I can't. It's a great piece.
It is a great piece. Don't get me wrong. Why is it the top? Why have we sold so many? I do not. I could not tell you.
No.
But it is miles above any other print we've sold. Yeah. I think we've sold a few Paul McCartneys.
Right.
Crossing Abbey Road.
Oh, that's another great piece.
We've sold a few of those. A few Mick Jaggers.
Oh,
which is a great piece. But no, Thin Man's not even, no one's even close to catching up to the Thin Man.
Okay.
So, and now there's only one left.
Well, here's another piece of trivia.
Oh, I love it.
You're probably going to know the answer.
Okay,
so
I'll hold a few seconds to
answer at home. What is the fastest selling Hirschfeld print of all time?
Ding, ding, ding. I know.
She does, she's not worried about copyright claims on ding, ding, ding.
I'll give you a hint. It's from 1995.
Oh, yeah.
I'll give you another hint. It was published on David's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
August 23rd, 1995. Jerry Garcia.
Jerry Garcia.
Fastest, sold out in a day?
Oh, yeah.
Wild. It's, wild.
It was really the fastest. Well, it just, it's a good combination.
Yeah, and done at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great trivia.
Yeah.
Tell your friends. You can stump all your friends. They'll be like, what are you talking? I don't even know what a Hirschfeld print is. What are you talking about?
But if you're listening to this podcast, you already have your own issues.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much for...
This was a fun episode. I'm glad we finally recorded it.
She has been wanting to do this for quite some time.
I have.
And it was pointed... We got a very nice letter from a listener. I'm going to shout him out. Kyle Sheldon sent a note to us recently about listening to the whole whole podcast series.
Which is terrifying.
Yes, that's what I said to him. Listening to the early, I don't know if I go back to listen to the early episodes.
I could
episodes.
Not. No, I would not come back into work if I went and re-listened to them.
But he wrote us this really wonderful note, and we do take compliments very well. Mm-hmm. We really are very happy to receive them, and it does... make Catherine feel especially.
I read it out loud at the dinner table. The whole email.
Kyle, you've been... That's public declamation. You know, this is a declaration. You know, we...
But he suggested we do an episode on Prince. And we had already had this in our calendar to record
literally
2 days after we received the email. We were like, we're going to a Prince episode on Wednesday.
Yeah, right.
And he sent us that email on Sunday.
Yeah.
And so we were like, oh, see, the people want it. So I'm glad we were already on track to do the print episode. But we do get, I mean, it is a question. We get questions about them a lot. And we want to set the record straight. And there's, unfortunately, sometimes there's fraudulent Hirschfeld prints out there.
Oh, yeah.
And we want you to be able to spot the difference and, you know what
and
you're looking
at. And
you
can always ask us.
Always send us a link and we'll we can tell right away usually. Yep.
Exactly. So if you have an idea for an episode or you have a question about a Hirschfeld print, write to us at info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube at Al Hirschfeld or Al Hirschfeld Foundation. Just type it in.
Visit our website at alhirschfeldfoundation.org.
And to see all the beautiful prints, we have 5 pages worth of prints, alhirschfeldfoundationshop.org.
That's correct.
And you can pick out your wish list and add that Jack Lemon to send to me. Add to the cart. Bink. Bye now.
Thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you when we do.
Bye.